Great. Should we start with some introductions? Tina, I'm joined by Zina Stufa, Managing Director, Methanol Johnson Matthey, and Shoko Harai, Director of Project Finance, Mizuho Americas. I'm Ben Padilla, Executive Director with FPGA. Brief intro.
Yeah, thanks Ben for the introduction. It's really a pleasure to be here in the Argus Methanol Forum in Houston, already involved in lots of interesting discussions, and I hope we spark more after the panel and during the panel discussion.
Thank you. I'm Shoko from Mizuho Bank. I have been in this project finance field since I joined Mizuho in 2017, but before that I was in this infrastructure and energy field almost entire of my career. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben Padilla, over 15 years in the shipping industry, on the ship owning side, ship management side, now ship finance side, and our mission at FPGA is to provide the most efficient source of capital to shipping. So thank you, both of you, for joining me on stage. To kick things off, maybe we can start with discussing investor support in general for energy transition. Zina, what are your clients and their investors excited about? You know, types of projects, opportunities.
Thanks, Ben. I guess I should start by saying it's a very, very exciting era to be in the methanol industry. And for us as Johnson Matthey, we certainly feel that in our everyday work, and we are quite excited about what comes ahead. So as the world's largest methanol licensor by licensed capacity, we believe we are very well placed to play a big part, and we're very excited to do so in the growth trajectory for renewable methanol, as we have done for the, let's say, conventional methanol all these years. So there's a huge interest in renewable methanol investments and projects. We heard from Greg how the Methanol Institute is tracking all these different projects around the world, and so are we. And it's quite a nice place to be, because we can have an overview of the global, of the developments and different investor requirements worldwide, depending on what the feedstock is, depending on what the targeted market is. Certainly what we see is that investors are looking for bankable projects, those that combine the right feedstock, the right location, the right technology partners, the right offtake agreements to take this off. And I guess we can talk more about each element of this as we go along.
Keyword, bankable projects. So, Shoko, from your perspective, from project finance point of view, lender's perspective, are firm offtake agreements required? How project developers, you heard in some of the other panels, sort of the stringent requirements for project finance, and how are they managing the early stages of these projects?
Yes, thank you. It is always a discussion if we can have a firm offtake, take or pay basis, long-term contract. And we have seen those projects in a methanol, obviously in a conventional lens, has the take or pay a long-term base of a contract. And it's the same MSF or other transition energy projects, that it's better to have the offtake for debt financing, project-based debt financing. And also, if we discuss about the e-methanol, then the feedstock portion will be also in a discussion, that if we plan to have renewable power and then green hydrogen and then e-methanol, then that is really typically a discussion of a project on project risk, so we call. And so those kind of arrangement to make the project firm is the key for the debt financing. And before that, like you mentioned, for the earlier stage fundraising, we also obviously have those connections to support the current fundraising, and we have sometimes discussions of pre-FID or post-FID equity fundraising, and that's so it depends on the investors. But if we discuss about the large amount of equity volume, then it's also a discussion of if it's always preferable to have the offtake, and that's where if we can have the project move forward to. So I think that's the key.
We'll get into project by project risk and project integration. I think that's an interesting topic. But what we're talking about early stage, Zina, you also have a role in early stage. You share risk up to a certain point in projects, providing proven technology, obviously. So
I think Choco-san touched on a really interesting point on this project, on project concept, and how we can actually minimize interfaces early on during the project development. And so it's quite important, and we as a licensor tend to do that. We like working collaboratively. We believe this is essential, developing end-to-end solutions for all the way from power to the final methanol product, or further downstream, methanol to jet, and as we heard the UOP presentation previously. So it's quite important that we develop end-to-end solutions so that we minimize interfaces for our clients and our clients' lenders. And we've got some examples to showcase this. So for example, for our circular methanol offer, where we are working in collaboration with Myre Chemical from the Myre Group, we are able to offer a waste-to-methanol solution fully integrated, and that gives our clients that minimized interface and risk that it comes with. So it's quite important for us to be involved in projects from the onset, so we can make sure that the client makes the right technology selections depending on the feedstock, depending on what the final product is, and that's how we tend to work with our customers. But I would turn the question to the audience, or maybe to the fellow panel members. What can we do as licensors to move these projects forward? It's quite interesting to see all these announced projects, but really we want is still on the ground. So how can we all work together, all the different links of the value chain, to make this happen?
Choco, you mentioned in our discussion previously sort of different take or pay strategies, LDs, cash buffers, from project finance point of view, that could help maybe these integrated projects move forward.
Yes, for the interface risk itself, for example, the interface risk in a construction. So one way to arrange it is to have everything one under one EPC, under probably the lump sum turnkey contract. Or if it's separated, then you can have one idea is to have construction manager that can cover all the interfaces. Or you can have a different, totally different project. So for instance, for the methanol, if you have a green hydrogen project outside of your project, then you can have one idea to keep the guarantee over those green hydrogen ones. Or you can have enough cash buffer to have room to adjust if something happens and that something doesn't affect to your project. Or so that kind of arrangement can be discussed depending on the particular process.
And I think, Ben, if I may, this is a great point that Choco-san is making. And being in Houston, it's a great place to be and discuss with a lot of the major EPC companies. One thing that we are hearing is, in order for the EPC to provide that much required wrap around the overall project, they need to have confidence in their technology elements. So again, this is where we come as a methanol licensor to provide that confidence based on proven technologies that have already been proven commercially at various scales, and this is a very important element in that journey.
And you, so, Shoko, you have a keen interest in e-methanol. In terms of trying to incentivize investment, or directing investment towards e-methanol, different rules, regulations, tax credits, how do you see that from a lender's point of view going forward?
Thank you very much. So to for economically incentivize those transition in energy in general. For instance, in the US, the tax credit, obviously just discussed earlier, is the key for economic rationale, right? Especially in, so for instance, for like 45E, maybe, and so why, thank you. And so those are the ideas. And in ammonia hydrogen area, I understand there is a CFD subsidy system in Korea, Japan, and also H2 Global in Europe. So those kind of government supports are something that, it's of course, it's challenging in terms of the financing structure because it's something new to us. But we we really look forward to structuring that income to the cash flow so that the project can be bankable and stable. And also in South area, like discussed, I understand there's a regulation by ICAO, and it, that kind of regulation point of view can incentivize this transition in many area, and that also should give the finance institutions to kind of relief that, okay, this is going to be there for long term. So that's the my idea.
And so we touched a bit about regulation, proven technology, sort of without getting into whether interest rates may rise or fall, but like assuming they might start to fall, do you think your clients, investors will generally be have more appetite for risk and tend to fund these projects, or is that?
I like the expert comparison. Yeah, yes, basically, yeah. I mean, of course, in general, if the interest rates goes down, then you have cheaper funding costs, and it will incentivize the investors to invest in, I mean, the sponsors to invest in those projects. And I think one key issue here is that over a year now, the EPC cost has been really high. And that has been something that, in no matter what sector, it has been an issue around this energy sector these years. And for if I believe if this the interest rate go down eventually, that may circle back to those kind of areas, and that will also really impact on the cash flow. It really have impact. So that's one thing that may also affect the incentive for the investment.
And there are investments, interesting investments taking place as we speak. I've got in my mind the recent investment in HIF, HIF Global plants in Uruguay, where JM is involved as a methanol licensor, but also elsewhere where HIF is deploying e-fuels projects. They raised over, I think, almost 200 million from Japanese investors, which is quite encouraging.
So you mentioned Uruguay. Country risk, does that kind of play a big deal in terms of project finance? And we talk about a lot of projects in the US, South America. How does that fall into the equation? From a project finance point of view, just looking at country risk. And I'm sure, obviously, North America may be more open, but do we start seeing more interest in the developing nations? Or?
Yes, thank you. Yes, for the country risk, we don't have any problem in hiring for the country, obviously, so let's see. Not something we see in the US or Canada, or basically some countries in Latin America. It only arises when we are having a project in certain countries only.
Yeah. The way we see it, if I look at the project pipeline, for us it boils down to the business case and how strong is the business case depending on the region that you plan to operate your plant, taking into account availability of feedstock, if we're talking about e-methanol or even biomethanol with additional electrolytic hydrogen, it's very critical to have the right renewable power supply so you can produce the electrolytic hydrogen, access to waste, biomass, feedstock, access to biogenic CO2, the right site that ensures that you have that availability of renewable power, the right site that ensures that you can actually construct the plant on time, within budget, and as I mentioned at the start, the right stakeholders, the right partners in that project, all the way from power production to hydrogen production, critically the heart of the plant, the methanol production, and then the right offtake agreement. So regions come in when we are exploring the overall and evaluating the overall business case, and of course we have to take into account any regional legislation that or incentives that help support. An example is the IRA. There are similar schemes that are operating in Australia, the Hydrogen Head Start system in Australia, there's the EU Innovation Fund, and you know, several country by country specific in Europe schemes that our clients are looking to utilize.
Is there anything maybe that you'd like to highlight, Zina, from other industries that are perhaps collaborating well together in developing projects?
So I think that there are really interesting examples around. I can speak about our experience, and let's start from one of the very first projects, pioneering projects in the area, the Haoloni pilot plant down in Chile, in Magallanes. It's quite exciting how you've got, as I said, the right players working together. So this is a wind to gasoline project. So Siemens Energy provided the wind to methanol part, with Johnson Matthey as the CO2 to methanol technology licensor and catalyst supplier. Johnson Matthey in turn provided the skid mounted unit. It's quite a small plant down there in Chile, and we worked with MAN Energy Solutions to fabricate the module, and then downstream our methanol is taken by ExxonMobil's methanol to gasoline unit. So it's a really nice showcase, if you like, of how different players have worked together in this pioneering project that's up and running for over 18 months now. Another really good example is here in the US, where we are working again for HIF Global in the second phase of their US plants, that is a methanol to jet facility. So there we worked in collaboration with UOP in the engineering phase of developing that methanol to jet facility. As I said, we're working in collaboration with Myri Chemical, who have a gasification technology, and we have announced that we are working on a project in Europe for waste to methanol facility that is currently at FEED stage. So there are really nice examples where the right players get together, they share the risk to make these projects happen. I've certainly missed a lot of other good examples. Let's discuss in the interval.
Oh, very exciting. Shoko, anything you would like to add in terms of examples, projects, where we can open up so we have ample time for questions also, maybe we have a nice crowd.
Yes, thank you very much. Not a specific project, but I would like to discuss about the project finance characteristics in a US market. So it's typical to have bank loan to cover the construction period plus 1 to 4 years maybe, and then take out happens by the project bond. And so the US market is really have a really wide and deep project bond markets compared to other areas. So that's one very strong characteristics. And I know some projects in RNG, renewable natural gas, that are financed by the project bond, and there may be some structure that can take a little deeper risk by the subordinated debt by project bond. So that's one way, and they can have a longer time, longer term debt financing compared to bank loan, where in Europe or in Asia, they can provide, the banks can provide longer term project finance. But here in the US, it's more like you have a shorter time term bank loan, and you can have a longer term debt financing by the project bond. So that's really interesting characteristics. And so that's kind of a combination of those financing tools, one thing that we can discuss.
So robust bond market here in the U.S.
Yes, that's amazing, yes.
Excellent. Should we open up? We have a few minutes left for questions from the audience. There's a question.
Thank you. Shukla, I've got a question for you. What is the technology readiness level actually influence in terms of like financing a project from your point of view? And when I'm talking about technology readiness level, do you consider technology readiness level of each unit or overall project technology readiness level you consider before like interested to financing any project?
Thank you very much for the question. For the technology, obviously the financing institutions are not experts. So we basically require the engineering report or evaluation by the technical advisors, as an IE. But basically, the project financing usually consider it bankable for something commercially available for certain times. But at the same time, if it is a combination of a existing technology, or there's only one version that may be new to you or to the world, or if it just doesn't scale up, then we can discuss it in general, obviously, but we can discuss this could look like something new, but it can be considered bankable. So it all happens with other lenders and also with the engineering experts, but that is the basic concept. Does that answer to your question?
I was just interested, like in terms of technology readiness level, how it affects the interest rate.
Yes. Thank you. It's more like the technology itself is more to understand if it's bankable or not, first of all, and I don't think it's a discussion of if that interest rate is high, then we can take this kind of technology risk in the project finance world, because the lenders are taking the project risk itself, and if technology doesn't go well, then the whole project is just gone. So it's more like, is it bankable or not? And it's not like a gradation of the margins of, I think.
Thank you. I have actually two questions. So one of them is, what do you consider to be a long-term offtake agreement? If we talk, for example, of a shipping company as an offtaker of a renewable methanol project. And my second question is whether you are open to, I understand that in the ideal world we don't have any risks, but so I understand downside protection, but I would like to hear a little bit about your willingness to have also some upside sharing in case, for example, a lot of these projects assume prohibitive green hydrogen prices or very high renewable power prices. So if in the lifetime of these projects, these, let's call it utilities, go down in price, as we all expect, if you are also willing to pass on that upside to the off-takers. Thank you.
The first part of the question, Shoko, was off-take agreements. What's considered long-term?
Yes, the long-term. Long-term means like 15 years or 20 years. around us. And that is because if you would like to have the financing for amortization of 15 years, then you need a 15-year contract. It's like that. So if you can, but you don't want to repay all the debt in like 5 years. So to have the mini perm structure, so-called, like you have, so let's say you have 20-year contract, then the banks can probably lend up to 19 years or 18 years amortization, meaning the repayment period will be 18 years. But your legal maturity would come earlier, in like 5 or 7 years after. So in 7 years of time, your legal maturity comes, so you have obligation to repay the full amount. So the refinance takes place before that. So that's the concept. So I mean, to have those kind of structure, the long-term off-take contracts, it is required, and that's for somewhere around 15, 20 and in general. And so it's take or pay basis. So whatever, as long as it's available, then you will, the off-take will pay for that.
I assume you also, because he mentioned shipping companies, so you mm-hmm. would assess the credit rating of the counterparty as well, that kind of factors into the equation also.
Exactly, that's a good point. So if it's like, typically it's better to be IG rated so that the project can be well rated for the financing.
I just mentioned it because you mentioned shipping and there aren't that many investment grade shipping companies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
As opposed to airlines where then you have airlines that are more right. Like state supported or whatever.
Right.
A bit different
mm-hmm.
profile.
Right, yes.
I didn't get the second part of your question, sorry.
The second part is about your willingness to share the upside.
Sharing the upside.
Sharing the upside.
Yes,
maybe not.
That's really, debt financing is really a no upside there, but you should not. Yeah, it's really.
What upside?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I think we have some other questions as well in the back. Maybe over there. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Surya from Embalum. I mean, earlier it was a question, but now it's more of an observation based on the previous question. And this is relevant for the marine sector. So we manufacture renewable methanol. One of the conversations I was having about a month ago with a very large commodities and fuels provider for the marine sector was they weren't interested in any long-term contracts that go beyond 3 or 4 years. And they're like, renewable methanol as a fuel for marine, it's a very nascent sector, and they are not sure which direction things will go in 3 to 5 years. So they were like, if you're asking for any commitments beyond 3 or 5 years, then thank you, we'll revisit at a future date. So this makes me think the question around bankability and long-term viability versus some of the expectations and the requirements of the markets don't necessarily gel. So any thoughts on how this gap could be bridged?
Something's got to give, right? So the demand is there. We have to decarbonize the marine sector among other sectors. So that's a given. There is currently a gap, and I would say several other gaps in that value chain that need to be bridged. And we have to bridge those gaps. And I would say discussions like today, where you actually have the lender, potentially Johnson Matthey's client, Johnson Matthey is a licensor, an EPC company, and we sit around the table and we discuss how we share the risk, because something's got to give. If we want to build those plants and have those capacities by 2030, 2035, 2040, we need to make sure we work collaboratively, we share the risk and we share the reward as well. I'm with you on that. That's my view. I'm not sure if I'm giving a solution, but that's how we think about it.
I think just to sort of comment on that, maybe traders aren't the right off-takers. I mean, just that naturally they're traders, they don't want anything they can't hedge in general. So maybe the end user is a better off-taker if you commit long-term, possibly. So, and any final comments? We're kind of out of time here. Are there questions? No, thank you.